So recently, my co-host Noel and I had an idea that we thought was just crazy enough to work. We had started talking about all the strange things that happen in the English language. There's so many sayings that don't quite translate, or if you heard them in another language, you would say, what the heck are these people talking about? We thought this was so fascinating that we wanted to do an episode on it, and luckily we got greenlit by our super producer, Casey Pegram.
Yeah, nothing goes out without his express approval.
Yes, yes.
It's very true.
He is a kingmaker here.
Very much so.
So Noel, you and I, oh, and I'm Ben, by the way, you and I wanted to do an episode about idioms, and we didn't want to go into this foray alone. So we were joined with our good friend and host of the podcast Pitches, Rowan Newby.
Hey.
Oh, here he is.
Oh, there he is.
That's him.
I've been here the whole time, you guys.
He's been here the whole time. He was sitting in when we were talking about the Statue of Liberty, and now we're finally giving him voice.
We did. We turned on the mic.
It's about time.
Yeah, it's true. But hey, here's the thing. You might remember when we first did this episode, we gave it a fantastic name, Idiomatic for the People, that I mentioned was coined by a ephemeral friend of the show who you've heard mentioned plenty of times.
Multiple times.
My dear friend and cohort, Frank the Tank Mulhern.
Hey, guys.
Frank joins us today.
I'm here.
In the flesh. He is, in fact, a human.
How about that?
He is in the flesh. He has a voice. He has a soul. And he has some ideas about some weird idioms. So it's all coming together, you guys. We're all here.
We finally did it.
We pulled it off. And I have a feeling that this will be a two-parter. Now, to be completely clear with everybody listening, this time, we do know roughly what our friends are going to be presenting, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's safe to say, in most cases, we don't know the stories behind these phrases or these words. So we're experiencing this with you as you listen.
Yeah, I mean, with four, you know, dashingly good-looking and intelligent gentlemen, we did not want to run the risk of doubling up. So we did give ourselves at least that luxury of knowing what the others were going to do. But no, we only researched our own, so there's going to be surprises aplenty in today's episode.
Yep, you've paid for the whole seat, but you only use the edge.
They didn't pay for any of this. It's a free podcast.
Well, they paid attention.
That's true. You always say that time is the most valuable currency these days, and that has never been more true than it is today.
So what do you say, gents? Who would like to kick us off? I'm just gonna count down from three and then pick someone.
Oh, that's like a dad move.
I know.
That's scary.
Three, two.
Start.
Okay. Oh my goodness. All right. What do you got, Frank?
All right. So recently, I went back to my hometown to visit my parents for their birthdays. They both have birthdays within 3 days of each other.
Weird. Sweet.
Super convenient since I live out of town. So we were hanging out and we did dinner and drinks and gifts exchanges and all that stuff. And then I decided I was going to go out and hang out with some of my friends in Augusta, Georgia, where I'm from. And on my way out, my mom said, y'all have fun, be safe. And then my dad chimed in with, trip the light, fantastic.
Ooh.
And yeah, no, I'd never heard that.
Psychedelic.
I've heard this phrase before, but massive points to your dad. What gravitas.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, he had no idea where it came from. And I asked him about it.
Very dad of him.
Yeah, and we, like, you know, guessed wildly for a few minutes, despite the fact that we all have working smartphones. So I left. It was still a mystery to me. And then I looked it up later on the next day, and there's quite a story to it. It goes through several different iterations and alterations.
Give it to us. Lay it on us.
Yeah, yeah. So the phrase itself means to dance nimbly or lightly and move to a pattern of musical accompaniment. The first variation of it is found in John Milton's Allegro. And the line is, come and trip it as ye go on the light fantastic toe.
Ah, the old fantastic toe.
Yes, yes, yes.
So sing-songy, I love it.
It really is. And the thing that kind of tripped me up was in this sense, trip isn't the sort of normal definition that we think of when it comes to your feet and moving around. It's more about being nimble, flit, light.
Fleet-footed.
Yes, yes. Kind Sprightly. Of like frolicking or whatever. And so you're in a ballroom and you're, you know, waltzing around the room. And it's just kind of about, you know, enjoying the night and kind of like living the bon vivant life. And fantastic kind of means with flair, basically.
So it's an escalation,
yeah,
right?
Expressivity, yeah. That's basically. Right. Okay. And that was kind of like the version that was around. It was just basically a John Milton thing. So the condensed version of a line from Milton appeared in Sidewalks of New York by Charles B. Lawler and James W. Blake in 1894. And the line is, "Boys and girls together, me and Mamie O'Rourke tripped the light fantastic on the sidewalks of New York." Mm. The song is pretty dull. You would think a song by the name of Sidewalks of New York might be kind of fun, but... Mm-hmm.
It's a Velvet Underground song, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's actually every Velvet Underground song.
Let's hear a little clip of that right now.
Boys and girls together, me and Mamie Rourke, tripped the light fantastic on the sidewalks of New York.
It feels sedate.
Very much
you know?
So. Not doesn't sound very exciting.
Yeah,
as you
doesn't,
mentioned.
Doesn't sound like you're jumping around.
It doesn't sound, from a purely melodic standpoint, it doesn't sound worthy of a phrase with the gravity of Trip the Light Fantastic.
Yeah. It sounds like something you'd hear in a church, basically. The
But people still love this phrase, right? This is not the last time. This is not the last we've heard of Tripping the Light Fantastic.
No, it's not. In fact, so Trip the Light Fantastic in the song Sidewalks of New York was in 1894. And one of the first things I noticed when I actually looked into this expression, as early as 1908, it was viewed as cliched or a hackneyed phrase, which seemed to be a really oddly specific year.
that's when they had reached peak
14 years of it was too much.
Sure.
It's not the Gilded Age anymore. We've got to move on.
People are avoiding ballroom dances because they don't want to hear that phrase again.
Exactly. My boss told me Trip the Light Fantastic.
That and dick.
It was kind of gone for a little while. And then in the early 1900s, specifically around 1910, through 1929, there was a lot of migrant Mexican workers coming over. There was the Mexican Civil War going on. There was a lot of political unrest and economic instability. And so there was a lot of northward movement. In fact, like a tenth of Mexico's population left during that time. And so they kind of brought their culture and their language and their music and food and all the things that make life fun. And eventually, Fantastic started to get subbed out with Fandango, which is a Spanish dance that's, to me, like when I read the description of a Fandango, it was really similar to flamenco in my mind. And it turns out that the Fandango is just a specific type of flamenco, you know, so there's, you know, regional specific types of flamenco.
Flamenco being... You it would be accompanied by a classical guitar and castanets.
Mm-hmm.
And
tambourines.
You, the dancer actually plays the castanets at times,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The video Boy with a Coin by Iron and Wine has a really cool example of that.
That's right. I remember that one now.
Another change happened with this expression with Tennessee Williams' play The Glass Menagerie. And in the opening monologue, as Tom spoke to his father, quote, "He gave up his job with the telephone company and skipped the light fantastic out of town."
Whoa, so they're skipping now.
Yes. By this time, like, the sense of tripped that we were talking about earlier as being nimble and agile, it kind of, like, treaded into archaic territory.
Treaded.
And, yeah, okay.
And it became lame.
Yes, so
they
it was
wanted to reinvent it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And Skipped is phonetically similar, and it has, you know, pretty much the same spirit and meaning as the former Tripped did. So, and Skipped is kind of doing double duty meaning wise because of skipping town.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing for me: the original Trip, it kind of starts to come back around too with the 60s and like the whole idea of it becoming more of a trippy thing. Not to mention, like, you had Queen talking about Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the Fandango and all the thunderbolt and lightning? It's very, very frightening to me, apparently. And then you've got this band, Procol Harum. Procol Harum?
Exactly.
Harum, yes. That's in 1967, and they have the song, I kind of like the Annie Lennox version better, if I'm being honest, but it's called A Whiter Shade of Pale.
This is what I was waiting for.
Yeah.
Lyrics by Keith Reid.
Lyrics by Keith Reid, who say, and it uses the more modernized version, I guess, well, relatively speaking, we trip the light Fandango.
Oh, no, it's skip the light Fandango.
Yeah, so
it's almost like unrecognizable from its form of Trip the Light Fantastic.
Trip the Light Fantastic to skip the Light Fandango. My thing here through the, all of this, the question that I have is, what light? What is this light? Because originally when we were talking about this off air, when I'm thinking about the light, I'm thinking about treading the boards on a stage, you know, like the footlights or something
Strolling
like that.
Strolling the planks in
But that
Cambridge.
Is not really something that comes around, at least in any of the etymology that we that you were looking into about this.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
But it's a very visual thing. And there's actually the L'Allegro that you mentioned. It was actually set to music by George Frederick Handel, who is a famous composer from the born in the late 1600s, died in 1759. And my mom, who is a singing teacher, this is a song that a lot of her students do. And the lyric is, you know, come and trip it as you go, what the light fantastic toe or whatever like that. I always thought it was the fantastic glow, but now I'm realizing that it's toe.
Fantastic toe is for some reason more appealing to me.
You're leading with that fantastic toe.
And it's nice. It's a nice switch. It's a plot twist, you know? Also, this reminds me, this would be a fantastic phrase for parkour. If you are someone who is a parkour enthusiast and you need to, for some reason, spice up your get-togethers.
Hardcore parkour.
Skip the light fantastic. Trip the light fantastic.
Exactly.
Trip the light fantastic. Skip the light.
Maybe
fantastic.
We should reinvent it yet again for a newer generation. You know?
There we go. Yeah.
Trippity skippity, the light glow fantastic toe.
How about flip it? Let's flip that light.
Yeah, exactly. A whole new word. Flip the light.
Flip the light. Clip the light fantastic. Nip the light. We could go on. Send us your suggestions.
Yes, please.
To ridiculous.
Any words that you know that rhyme with trip.
To ridiculous at howstuffworks.com. We'd love to hear from you. Frank, I am impressed.
Thank you. I really had no idea that, you know, how much that had changed over time. It's really fascinating how language is, you know, constantly moving and changing and it's almost unrecognizable sometimes.
Speaking of seamless segues, right? who's next? Who will trip the light fantastic of idioms?
I could go.
Yeah?
Go.
You've got some good ones.
I got an okay ones. I don't know if it's as cool sounding as tripping the light fantastic, because that is a nice kind of compound idiom. Mine are both single words. The first one, I don't know. Let's see. What should I do? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do dope.
Ah, yes, yes.
I'm going to do some dope.
A classic.
On the show.
Whoa, hold
right
on.
Now.
We, oh, no.
We, we talked about we this off air, right? We talked about this for a while off air.
We did.
About which words take up the mantle of describing something good or cool. Mm-hmm. Cool's the OG, right?
The OG.
And also how it's sort of like a trendy thing to use a word that inherently means something negative and then flip it around and use it to describe something good. And dope is a really good example of that. But it actually has way more history than I ever would have possibly given it credit for. So here, let's see, where does our journey of dopeness begin?
The first one I always think of is like being a dope.
Well, that's, see, and that doesn't even enter into this at all.
Really?
No.
Yeah. I mean, really?
It's certainly a use of the word, and you'll see why it was used that way, but that's not really the direction that my research took me. Originally, dope was a word that was used to describe some kind of like a dipping sauce. Okay. Mm-hmm. So sort of like a, you know, let's just say a honey mustard, but more like a gravy type dipping sauce. Mm-hmm. And it was a Dutch word, the origin being the word dupe. Which is kind of fun because you'd think, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, you know, mm-hmm. if you dupe somebody, you mm-hmm. make a dope out of them, right? Mm-hmm. So dupe was a thick, sticky sauce or a gravy, and it became a part of the English lexicon in the American colonies. Washington Irving, the famous writer, what did he write, Ben? You're a literature mm-hmm. guy.
Police Academy 4.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Famed screenwriter Washington Irving of the Police Academy movies fame.
He also wrote The Legend of Sleepy
Hollow. That's the guy. old Ichabod Crane. So Washington Irving introduced it, an early example, in his satire called Salmagundi, which I have not read. Has anybody read Salmagundi?
I've read Salman Rushdie.
It's different.
Don't be fooled. Yeah, I read that, but it's been many moons.
Well, it was published in 1807. Ooh. So, and this is where he described something called a phyllo dripping pan, which is like a dough kind of a baking situation. And he used this term in this phrase, quote, love of what the learned Dutch call dupe. Spelled D-O-U-P, like soup with a D. And then that is where dope started to come into fruition as we know it today. And it really started taking off, this idea of a syrupy, goopy, doopy, dare we say, substance in the smokable form of opium. That appeared in the New York City rag Truth, which is a great name for a newspaper. Mm-hmm. Really instills some confidence in the words printed therein. And it's talking about opium fiends, dope heads, dope fiends, as early as 1883. And here's a couple of quotes from Truth. And this comes from a fantastic article on visualthesaurus.com that talks about the history of dope, doping, dopes, dupe, all of that stuff. Here is one from March 6, 1883. Interested, but, and I love this word, impecunious fiends receive, therefore, a commission which immediately reverts to the proprietor of the opium den in exchange for a pipe privilege and a shell of dope.
Impecunious is a dressed up word meaning broke.
That's right. And then they have another one here, which is my favorite because it's got another phrase in it that I would like to explore as well. Alexander was hitting the flute.
Wow.
Vigorously and rapidly getting to the bottom of
a
quote, hop toy of dope, which is, quote, fiend patter for smoking a considerable quantity of opium.
Good. Fiend patter.
Fiend patter. That's great. Dope speak. The dope is cheap and the joint keeper does not catechize, Ben? C-A-T-E-C-H-I-S-E?
Catechize.
Catechize. That makes sense. What is that? It's sort of like being reprimanded? Yes, it's sort of like chastise. Catechize them as to whether or not they are minors.
Oh, so were they smoking dope joints, like opium joints?
The joint keeper, as in like the proprietor
of the
establishment. That's right. Yeah, the joint keeper, the barman. All right, let's say. So that's fantastic. So then we've got dope kind of making the transition into being a verb that can have either a positive or a negative connotation. So if you're doping something, you are injecting it or imbuing it with some sort of medicinal substance that can either have a positive or a negative effect. And it really started entering the lexicon of horse racing.
Yes, because it came to mean insider info, right?
We're going to get there, absolutely. Okay. But it originally was the way we think of with performance-enhancing drugs, you know. That is still a term that's used today by the – it's a body that investigates and maintains the standards of, you know, testing athletes to make sure they're not, quote-unquote, doping. Anti-doping laws is what they call them that they enforce. But so originally with – it was not about athletes, human athletes. It was about horses. Okay. And it became such a – you know, thing. And they would be, they could be injected with anything from like whiskey, injected. I don't know if you'd inject the whiskey, that'd be weird, to like a stimulant. Yeah. So okay. You might dope someone else's horse to like slip them a Mickey,
hobble
right?
Sure.
Yeah, hobble the horse, exactly. Or you might inject or apply some sort of stimulant to your own horse so it gives it a little edge. And then it became so prevalent that when you knew about which horses were being affected by what stuff, that became referred to as the straight dope, the inside dope.
Whoa.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Oh, also, that's the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA.
Aha.
So any,
what are you talking about? Come on.
I love a good acronym.
Yeah.
So one last thing. It was originally used in drug parlance, I guess, to describe an opiate, which would eventually be the most popular or insidious version, was heroin. So even when people are suffering from heroin withdrawal or opiate withdrawal, they call it getting dope sick, right? Yeah. That is a thing. And recently, more recently, it's kind of almost exclusively used to refer to marijuana. You're a dope head. You know, you're smoking dope, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what your mom says, right? It's sort of a bit of a square thing to say these days, right? Here's the thing. In looking into this, I'm just going to really quickly go through this. I found the origins of 420.
Whoa.
Nice. What? Lay it on us.
Yeah. So there's an article in High Times magazine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's true.
Yeah. What a stunning plot twist.
Stunning plot twist about the history of 420. So it turns out that there's so many ideas about like what 420 was. One of them was like, oh, there's 420 discrete, distinct chemicals in marijuana. That seems like a stretch. Mm-hmm. 420 was supposedly like some kind of police radio code for like dope smoking in action or whatever.
We got a 420 here.
Also, yeah, we got a 420. Also not the case. So somebody reached out to High Times in the 90s, the early 90s, saying, no, none of this is true. Me and my friends from a high school.
We know.
Not only do we know, we invented it. Okay.
What?
So, and then I've got proof. So this guy reached out, a guy by the name of Brian Jarvinson, who is a freelance writer for High Times. He received this email or this correspondence from a guy who was running a business in San Rafael, California, which is very near San Francisco. And so he's like, okay, I'm interested. The guy identified himself as Steve Waldo. Okay. So he said, okay, me and my friends, we referred to ourselves as the Waldos. And we went to San Rafael High School and we had a secret spot that we were trying to find, like a mission where it was like going to be this like patch of marijuana was growing, mm-hmm. like someone had planted and they had to like find it like Holy Grail style. And so they agreed that 1 hour after school ended at 4:20, they would meet and go on this sojourn to find this marijuana field.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
And they would
meet by a statue of Louis Pasteur at San Rafael High School.
Beautiful.
And they apparently were known for their affinity for smoking the dope, the Marx Brothers, and stand-up comedy. Sounds like a bunch of dangerous characters.
I would never hang out with
Pasteur
them.
Pasteur would love it.
You really would love it.
That's fascinating.
That's it.
So fascinating.
Yeah. That's dope.
That's pretty dope. Oh, very good, Ben.
And it all started with Ben, your whole thing, like, you know, using a negative to describe a positive. Now it's something that the kids say when something is cool.
It's interesting that it went from like such a harsh drug as an opiate to marijuana, which of course now is more or less legal in most places.
More or less. And it's at least much more much more universally considered innocuous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think dope is still kind of like an opiate sort of word.
It can be a catch-all. Mm-hmm. It certainly is.
Specifically when you're talking about dope sickness.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's the Coca-Cola of drugs.
This leads us to an important point. And a question, I think, that we were asking each other off the air when the four of us were hanging out. How do we get in front of this? Right now, dope is encountering...
it's having a moment.
Yeah, it's having a moment. It's having a renaissance, right? The same way that cool did, wicked, sick, rad, gnarly...
Bitchin'.
Tubular, radical. And the question that keeps haunting me, I mean, I don't think we figured this out when we were talking about this earlier. What's the next one? What's the next word that's going to inherit this mantle? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, what's the next dope?
I don't know, man.
It's a one-syllable word, though, probably, right?
It probably is.
Yeah. Is it possible that our friend Rowan Newby has it?
Sure. I'm honored that you would think that I have a cornucopia of silly words just floating around in the bank of my...
You're
our cranium.
You're our go-to
resume.
Go-to,
really?
Yeah,
it is on the resume.
It is in print.
That's why they brought me in here, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just throw some out there. What about slunt?
Slunt?
Yeah, it's kind of gross. That's but a maybe very it's like harsh. Maybe it's like you're mean. Maybe someone's mean.
That's a harsh mouthfeel.
Maybe like flong.
I like flong.
Well, I like flong.
What about like
bro, I'm so flong right now.
Dude. Last night I got really chipotled. That's like chipotle. That means I ate too much chipotle.
It means yes, I got listeria.
Yes. I went through a phase where for some reason, and I never apologized, Casey, to you or Noel on air, so I should do it now. I went through, I get stuck in certain phrases and I overuse them very easily. And I went through a period where I was just, instead of saying yes to something or great, or I've seen this email, I was replying to you guys with just Zanzibar. Because and no one ever called me on it. You guys never said, dude, what are you talking about? You just let it roll.
Really, well, it's just, you know, I mean, Ben's going to be Ben.
If you're bold enough and you just, yeah.
You just got to own it.
If you own it, no one's going to say anything.
That's the truth with any of these words. And we've coined a few on the show ourselves, like straight seahorse teeth.
Sure, yeah.
Which has been making the rounds with some of the folks on the Ridiculous History page.
Yeah, we should thank some of our fellow listeners wrote in and and told us that they were propagating this phrase, which we thought was fantastic. I got to admit, man, I don't know about you, Noel, but I had no idea straight seahorse teeth would take off.
You must have had a little inkling, Ben.
The first day you hear that in the wild is going to be amazing.
Wow. Do you think we will?
I hope so.
I hope it's in a really weird situation, too.
What other situations do we find ourselves in the wild, Ben?
That's true. We don't have regular days.
No, we really don't. But we do have another idiom to throw out at you, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's yours, my friend Rowan.
That is correct. I do have one, since that is the game we're playing here. How funny would it be if I just was like, oh, wait, I was supposed to do homework?
That happens to me all the time.
No, I just was sitting here drinking coconut water. What do I have here? Cucumber water.
That is a cucumber Montane sparkling water made right here in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia.
Is it true that if we say the company name and the product two more times, they'll send us a case of it?
We already have cases. This is our office water.
Okay,
of
well,
we have a Montane
me.
Glut. Oh, you.
Take some with you.
Take some with you.
You guys are taking away from the fun of getting free things, but okay.
Do you want us to, like, make it a scavenger hunt or, like, make it more fun?
Sure.
Okay, well, we'll give you a series of clues
Thanks.
At the end of the episode.
Do I seem a little off to that? Do I seem all right? I drank a lot last night.
Well, you know, I'm not a hangover doctor or whatever, but you seem fine. What do you think, guys? Does he seem all right?
You look great.
Yeah, he looks fantastic. You're absolutely glowing.
Okay, well, good. That shower helped. Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, we've all knocked back a few at our local watering hole and woke up feeling rather ripe. Which is called, we might as well say it. Yeah, it's on the nose. Yeah, you can be pretty gnarly if you drink too much, which brings up my first idiom here. The time-honored colloquialism, hair of the dog.
Oh.
Which is a short for, of course, hair of the dog that bit you.
So, wait, because this one, I have no idea what the etymology is, but I've heard it used again in the wild.
Sure.
And it's usually when someone starts drinking kind of early in the day, you know, not distressingly early, not like airport bar
brunch early,
but like brunch early.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, it's you can also infer from the way where it's used in normal conversation that it's to quell the aching headache from the night before. You know, you wake up with a headache because you're hungover. And so you're like, oh, hair of the dog that bit you. I'm just going to keep drinking. That'll solve everything if I just keep drinking, right?
Wow.
Question mark.
Hair of the dog, Lloyd. Hair of the dog.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I always think of The Shining, too. Yeah, and it's referring to it's a cure, like finger quotes, cure. There's no scientific proof that it works whatsoever. But the story goes, if you indulge too much, the next day you ingest more of the same alcohol, and it quells this pain in your head. But the origin of the expressions dates back to medieval times, actually, when it was thought that after being bit by a rabid dog, one could relieve the pain by simply rubbing some hairs from the same dog into your wound.
Okay, first of all, that's disgusting.
Very disgusting.
That seems very unsanitary.
I'm not a doctor. I don't recommend this.
And this is something that we've talked about in other episodes of the show. This sort of like, I don't know, you hear about it in medieval practitioners of remedies, you know, I'm not even going to call them doctors. That wasn't quite even a thing yet. But it seemed like leeching or bloodletting. Only this is like almost like the idea of fighting fire with fire, right?
Yeah, sympathetic magic. This theory was first developed by a guy named Sir James Frazer in his masterpiece, The Golden Bow. And in this, the argument is that like can cure like, this correlation between things, whether they're related through their physicality or whether they're related through their space and time and the event, right?
Like a voodoo doll or something. Even.
Sure, yeah. Or like how you could become a werewolf by drinking water from a wolf print in the woods, which is also, by the way, not true if you... If you were about to give it a go, I don't it'll work, but write in if it does once you transform back. But you're absolutely right, Noel. It's kind of the idea that the poison can help create the antidote.
You guys always enlighten me on my own idioms that I bring to the table. I love that. What did you call it? What kind of magic was that?
Sympathetic magic.
Sympathetic magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of like a sympathetic vibration, right? So it's if something vibrates at the right frequency, it makes something else vibrate at that same frequency. So sympathetic magic would be like if you are interacting with something related to the malady that you're suffering from, or maybe even, dare we say, the cause, that it will somehow cure it. But what you're getting at, Rowan, which I totally agree with, is that this is completely magical thinking. It's this idea that to be less drunk or to feel less bad, I should just drink more. And sure, it'll make you feel a little better because you're drunk again.
It's placebo.
It's also rabies.
Right. And also, how do you get the subsequent hairs from the same dog that bit you?
Yeah, I feel like you're in an ongoing antagonistic relationship with this dog.
You've done that, you've already won.
That's right. Well, it requires some sort of mystical quest because here we go. I propose something.
All right.
This idea of seeking out some sort of creature that has wronged you and then you have to kill it to get the hair.
That's
sort of the idea, is you gotta slay the beast and then you get the hair, rub it on your wounds. But let's apply this to, you know, how the idiom came around to bar times.
I guess, like, who doesn't like a good mimosa or Bloody Mary in the morning? Let's be honest, you know.
I was at the airport.
Just a little nip.
I'm a Bloody Mary guy.
Yeah? Yeah,
I just recently started liking Bloody Marys, but I was shocked. I was at the airport at like 6 a.m. this morning. I'm looking in the people are pouring vodka in the airport bar at 6. Yeah. That had to be some hair of the dog.
Alcoholism is a real thing. Yeah.
Well, they're also
they're catching a red eye.
Possibly, in their defense, they're coming from a very different time zone.
Could be.
We do have the world's busiest airport.
That was in Chicago.
That is true.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. No.
Well, you don't know.
No.
You never know.
I've decided to assume.
That's fair. I was a little shocked, though. And you know what? Even weirder, I was like, maybe I should have a little nip at 6 in the morning. That seems fun.
If I see someone drinking that much at an airport, I go, they fly all of the time. They are getting on airplanes like 4 times a week or something.
Because the thing about airports is it's sort of like a liminal space where it's like a space between spaces.
Yeah.
So normal rules of decorum and life skills do not apply when you're at the airport.
Absolutely true.
It's like garbage. Yeah.
What happens in the airport stays in the airport.
Yeah. Sweatpants and Crocs. Vodka shots. Yeah. Crocs. Trip that light. Fantastic.
We have some airport war stories that would be great for a future episode. What do you think? Let's dive into our personal lives a little.
I'm fine with it.
Okay. But I have a question for you, Rowan.
Sure.
Okay. This is illuminating to me, and I cannot help but wonder what kind of terrible night someone had where they went on this quest, as Noel said. They were bitten by a rabid dog. They hunted it down. They took its hair. Mm. And then in the morning, they started drinking booze. And someone's like, hey, dude, are you okay? Like, how bad does your night have to be?
How bad does your night have to be? Right, exactly. I mean, alcohol will always act as, you know, a numbing agent, I feel like. I mean, for God's sakes, then they used to put whiskey and milk and give it to their kids, you know?
I still do that.
You do, really?
Just random children.
Sick.
Random children.
Okay. Wow.
You know, I actually found a really good physiological description of it on a website called vinepair.com, which is a great name for a website.
Yeah, it is a great name. I actually have the same source.
What did you find?
I found, you know, I was talking about these physiological aspects of, like, how, you know, the alcohol affects you. Like Bloody Mary works because the alcohol inside the drink begins acting on the chemical receptors inside the brain to increase the feelings of pleasure. It's actually why so many people like booze in the first place, and also probably why you drank so much the night before. and the chemical reaction begins to overpower the hangover symptoms, thus allowing us to feel at least a momentary relief from the bad decisions of the previous night. So,
and what is life but a series of momentary reliefs?
Yeah, and quick fixes, you know?
I mean, now, have any of y'all ever had hair of the dog actually cure your hangover? Because that's always been like a delay strategy for me. Like when I've worked in a restaurant, I was like, let me just get through the lunch rush, right, and I can de-stim spinach for the next 3 hours and then go home.
I'm not a practitioner of hair of the dog, even when I'm living a crazy airport life. It just seems strange to introduce that kind of variable after, you know, especially if you've had a night where you were drinking and you wake up the next day, like maybe you can power through, as you said, Frank, delay until what, 3 p.m. or something?
Yeah, and then, at some point, boom, your body has to metabolize this alcohol, like unless you just steadily drink from that point to the rest of your life.
Which will grow increasingly shorter.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
No, it really does seem like prolonging the inevitable. I am incapable of day drinking successfully, too. I know that, Frank, that that's not our thing.
No.
It's just like, because I get sleepy.
So nappy.
I get cranky. It's fun. It just is going to kill my day. Mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of night I've had the night before. I'm just going to power through. Mm-hmm. And we have some very helpful tips for this. All of a sudden, this has become an alcoholism 101 podcast.
Oh, boy.
You wait.
Just drink a lot of water. Drink a lot. That has always cured my headache. If I just drink a lot of water, I don't want to drink booze. I want to drink water.
Stay hydrated,
kids. Okay. And a little bit of Aleve, a little bit of ibuprofen.
Eat something.
Yeah. Drink. Be merry.
No, don't be merry. Feel sad. Be ashamed of yourself.
Feel
because
penitent.
You're a garbage person and you don't deserve to be happy.
You should never drink again.
And you should make wildly melodramatic proclamations of
also
that.
True. Yeah.
Also true. To everyone you know.
Yes. On social media.
People you don't.
Yeah, so I found this phrase from this old English writer named John Haywood on phrases.org that is supposedly the first origin of Hair of the Dog. It's from 1546. Thought it was really interesting.
Are you going to read it?
I am going to read it.
Will you do a voice?
I 100% will do a voice.
Yes! All right, I'm in.
I pray thee let me and my fellow have a hair of the dog that bit us last night. And bitten were we both on the brain, aight?
It literally says that.
We saw each other drunk in the good ale glass.
Bit on the brain. So wait a minute. What you're saying is, I think we were talking off mic how...
Both to the brain.
Both to the brain.
All right. A-R-I-G-H.
Aight. That's great.
Aight.
So you were telling me a little bit off mic that this article talks about how some of these phrases don't really come into popular use until like the literal version of it sort of falls out. So this is sort of what you're seeing there, is this gentleman using that to describe the actual experience of being hungover. And he's kind of using it as a metaphor when it was sort of a folkloric tradition in the first place, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, super fascinating. And
we still use it to this day. I mean,
we really
isn't that
do.
Just something?
So we've got dope, hair of the dog, and tripping the light, fantastic. I'm glad that we set this up as a two-parter in the beginning. this is one of those shows that I wish wouldn't end, but we will have to end today's episode eventually. I have one contribution. God, I feel like the evil character in a fairy tale going, I have a present for the child. There's one more gift. This phrase is something that we've heard before, and I primed you guys just a little bit off air for this. The word is gadzooks.
Oh.
And so that's why I was like sliding that in, hot topic, mall.
Right.
Gadzooks, Spencers. For a lot of us in our age group in this part of the world, when we hear the phrase gadzooks, we associate it with a store that used to be quite popular in the era of malls, and it was called gadzooks.
Are we in a post-mall America?
Yes.
It's getting there for sure.
Rapidly
approaching. I guess that's true, because the mall used to be like a central like fixture of like hanging out.
It was the center of town.
It was the center of town. Gadzooks was also like where you would buy those giant pants that were called JNCOs for any of our younger listeners that maybe don't remember this absurd time.
Yeah, or that orb with the lightning.
Ooh,
the glass that would touch.
Or
touch
the fart like pills. The needle thing where you put your hand and it shows it's your hand and the metal.
Which, as I said before, those things have to be filthy by now.
Ugh.
I had
they were
one
always
for years.
Filthy.
Yeah.
The ones on display in like the science store.
Oh,
you don't
yeah.
want, you don't want to touch that to your face.
So it turns out that Gadzooks actually has a storied history. You know, things like Gadzooks or Zounds, which is also related, oddly
Zounds.
Enough. Yep. They sound like something you would hear on the old Adam West.
Scooby-Doo or
something. Yeah, Scooby-Doo, yeah. The old Adam West Batman. But they have religious origins. Dictionary references date Gadzooks as far back as the late 1600s as a shortening of another exclamation, which was, by God's hooks.
Whoa.
God's hooks.
That's terrifying.
Being a reference to the nails on the cross of Jesus Christ.
You know what first popped into my head when you said God's hooks? I pictured God as being like Pinhead from Hellraiser,
yeah.
shooting out hooks into the flesh no. of the yeah. damned.
I was thinking that too, like a God with, you know, that has an unseeable form except sure. for the hooks where the hands should be, you know?
This is like
strange.
A super pirate.
Yeah, super pirate. this is weird because I mentioned Zounds earlier. Zounds also appears to date back to around the 1500s as a euphemism for the phrase, by God's wounds.
So it should be pronounced Zounds.
It should be.
Z-O-U-N-D-S, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm. And I guess it depends on your accent,
too. That sounds right.
So this phrase, Gadzooks, is not alone in its evolution. Even phrases that are somewhat innocuous, like Jeepers Creepers, was originally a euphemism to get around saying Jesus Christ, but still have the same thing. I think the guy who made the film Jeepers Creepers doesn't know that. But also, apparently, that guy's a creep.
I've heard
bad things.
I'm a big fan of Jeezum Crow.
that's a good one.
I'm a big fan of cheese and crackers.
Also good.
People say that, right?
Oh, for
yes,
sure.
Yeah.
Children, mainly. Children.
I said that earlier.
when you were ordering it.
Yes. Yeah, right? Or just the strangers on the train. So it's an exclamation. We don't hear it too often now. I think Prince Philip said it in These Are Modern Days, but it would be unusual for us to be hanging out and maybe have a surprise party for Casey and for him to see the cake and whatever, you know, mariachi band or whatever we had to spice it up. It would be really strange for him to go, Gadzooks, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, these hip young millennials these days, they bring back this stuff all the time, saying it ironically, you know?
Yeah.
I say zoiks a lot.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I started saying oish, and I have no idea why. It's just
oish.
Stuck in my
what
head.
Is that one?
I think I just made it up.
So, like,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think you made that up.
I was just so surprised. That's what came out. And I was like, I'll keep that one. But the use of gad for God occurs in other phrases, too. Egad.
Egad.
Yeah.
Egad. Right. And these are called phraseological combinations. There are other ones that didn't make the cut. Gadzooks is, you did that Coca-Cola reference earlier. Gadzooks is one of the most That's successful right.
mm-hmm.
of these turns of phrase.
As
I would like,
as, yeah, branding
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, I'd like to end this part of the show by introducing you guys to some Gadzooks-esque things that didn't make it. They're all ridiculous.
Please.
Are you prepared?
So I'm prepared.
Ready. All right. Gads Bobs. Also an exclamation. Gads Bobs. Gads Lid. There's Gads Budlikins.
That's
Gads Budlikins.
Can
we bring that back?
No doubt.
Yeah. Gads Budlikins.
Gads Budlikins. No, how dare you?
And then Gads Nouns.
Nouns?
Nouns, Nouns.
That's just lazy.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the clear audience favorite here is Gads Budlikins.
It's Budlikins.
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 Budlikins. Now, that would be a good name for a Dukes of Hazzard
wow.
type character.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Budlikins.
Oh, my God. Oh, gosh.
So this is strange. Gadzooks, Gads Budlikins. We found out about Tripping the Light Fantastic, the hair of the dog that bit us. And it was overall pretty dope, wouldn't
sure
you
was.
Say?
Thanks, man.
Zang.
Zounds.
Zounds.
Noel rolled his eyes just a little bit.
No, I did not.
I deserved it.
No, I opened them wide in affection and admiration for my dear co-host, Ben Bullen.
Thank you, Noel Brown. And likewise, one thing that we found that was of great interest to us on our first episode of Idiomatic for the People was that in the course of the show, we had, totally without planning it, used several, like multiple different turns of phrase or figures of speech or idioms that we did not even notice until we went back and listened to it. So I wonder if we did that today as well.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it?
That's one.
For shizzle.
Yeah. There's a really cool video by Kishibashi who crams like 120 or so idioms into a single music video. That's really cool.
Well, we got four.
We're doing our best. We're living our best life.
We're no Kishibashi, but we're working our way up to it.
But who is? Not even him sometimes.
But he is from Athens, Georgia, which is also where R.E.M. is from, which is one of Frank's favorite bands, which is where Idiomatic for the People came from. So thanks, R.E.M., and thanks, Frank Mulheron, for helping dub this segment.
All right. Frank. Thank you.
And thanks for coming on the show, dude.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Rowan Newby.
Uh-huh.
Thanks to you as well.
Dude, my pleasure. Seriously.
You dashing man with your, he's got a shirt on that you guys wouldn't believe. It's got boots on it.
It's very colorful. I wanted to take a picture, but I didn't want to look weird.
Oh, no. It's fine. Everyone takes pictures of everything these days.
All right. Well, that
actually,
works for
Ben
me.
Is wearing Google glasses right now. We keep telling them they're out of fashion.
They're not supported anymore.
No. Yeah.
They're no longer
but,
dope.
You take
they don't
pictures.
Even function. You keep saying, okay, Google, and nothing
Google,
happens.
Take, I know. Take I know. Picture of shirts, Google. Why yeah. isn't this working?
All right. Well, you guys busted me. They are apparently not as inconspicuous as I thought. But yes, thank you so much for coming on the show. If you would like to hear more from our good friend Frank the Tank Mulheron, fear not, because you're essentially a shadow member of our podcast. Like, we run ideas past Frank.
Yep.
And Frank will sometimes give us ideas, and we just try not to disappoint him.
I'm a little worried that having his actual voice on the show is going to open up some sort of rift in time-space, but I'm willing to take the chance.
Mm-hmm. God, let's hope not.
If you want to hear more from our good friend Rowan Newby, check out his podcast, Pitches. What is Pitches?
Pitches is a podcast about ideas. It is a comedy podcast. And boy, oh boy, I would love it if any of these fellow listeners would like to write in any ideas. I mean, really, it can be an app, a turn of phrase. How about that? It could be, an invention or who knows?
And Noel,
the list goes on.
You were on a great episode of Pitches.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think it's coming out soon.
Is it today?
It's out today. Yeah. Out today. So, well, this will be a little removed from that in time, so it already exists in the world.
That's right. Whoa.
I pitched a really silly idea for a suntan lotion that gets you drunk.
Ah, the old hair of the tan.
Exactly.
Hair of the tan that tanned you. Right. Oh, it was very good.
I appreciate it. Yeah, very excited. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I think we've got a future episode coming up where Ben is going to be.
That is correct.
Well.
Yeah,
that's in the cards. Tune in
very soon. And yeah, if you want to find us on the Instagrams, you know what to do at Pitches Podcast, baby. Shameless plug.
Oh, we're far past the point of shame for plugs. Speaking of plugs, you can find us and your fellow listeners on our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians. We're also all over Twitter and Instagram. We've even started sharing our own personal adventures. Is that right, Noel?
That's right. I am at Embryonic Insider.
And I am at Ben Bolin. We hope that you enjoy this episode. We hope you tune in for the next one as Idiomatic for the People. Soldiers on. Frank, I cannot emphasize it enough. We're huge fans of that name. Thank you. We're thanking you profusely because I think legally we don't have to pay you.
It's fine.
You That's can what we it. Do. We're also profuse thankers just in general.
That's true. Thank you, Noel. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you, Ben. And thank you, super producer Casey Pegram. Thank you, Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Thank you, Gabe, our research associate, who had absolutely nothing to do with this episode today, but we still thank him just the same.
He's a great guy.
He's a real mensch. And thanks to you, Ben Bolin, for being such a dashing and debonair co-host. And that jacket and those Google glasses are really popping today.
You know what? I've committed to the bit.
That's what you got to do. We'll see you next time, folks.